Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Good afternoon, and a big thank you to David Alders, as usual, for Passages of Life. Welcome along to Saturday afternoon here on Premier Christian Radio, and a very happy new year to you. And I hope that you'll be joining me here on Unbelievable throughout the year for more fascinating discussions as we continue to look at the intersection of Christianity and other people's beliefs or non-belief. But don't forget, there's plenty more to come this Saturday afternoon. Don't forget the best of Premier Playback. Listen to some nuggets from the past week from about 3:30 this afternoon. Intersecting that and this programme is the short programme Firmly I Believe by Father John Twisleton. And later on in the afternoon, Hip Rock UK with Dave and B. Also, of course, Straight Up with Grant Lee and Tito Carlis. That's coming up from about 6 o'clock this evening. So, what are we talking about today? Freemasonry and Christianity.
You're unbelievable.
And we're asking, are they compatible? Can you be a Freemason and a Christian? Freemasonry, of course, is a secret society. It's a very ancient order, only accepts men, and you have to believe in God to be part of it. Most Freemasons would say we're quite simply just a charity that likes to do good and a place to meet men who are like-minded. But some Christians see problems with Freemasons, particularly that there appear to be religious elements that conflict with Christianity. Certainly some people are very wary of the oaths, symbols and rituals that are involved in Freemasonry. We're going to be looking into it. To help us do that, Michael Donovan joins us. He is an evangelical Christian and a Freemason. He says there's no problem there. Doug Harris also with us from the Reach Out Trust. He has got a problem. Let's find out what they're saying later on. And they'll be joining me shortly. Though I will just read before we get to them a definition of Freemasonry. This is what the United Lodge offered in 1984 as its own official definition. They say it's one of the world's oldest secular fraternal societies, a society of men concerned with spiritual values. Its members are taught its precepts by a series of ritual dramas which follow ancient forms and use stonemasons' customs and tools as allegorical guides. The essential qualification for admission is a belief in a supreme being. Well, we'll find out more about whether it's possible to be a Freemason and a Christian later on in the programme. Let's have some discussion, though, and feedback on last couple of weeks of programming. 2 weeks ago, Doug Harris was with us again when he took on Robert Stovold, an atheist, on the subject of the Christmas story. Robert's contention was that it's essentially cobbled together from a number of pagan myths and legends, and none of it actually took place. Doug was defending the story as told in Matthew and Luke. And here's someone else who wanted to come up with perhaps another reason why we can trust the story.
Hello, Justin. My name's Diana. I was just wondering when Robert said about the eyewitnesses and there couldn't have been any eyewitnesses for Luke to have got his account. Well, why couldn't it have been Mary herself? I know the Bible doesn't say that, but tradition, I think, has that Luke could have interviewed Mary. And if you go on to look at when Jesus gets lost in the temple, there's such a sort of overtone of how anxious Mary was and a great emphasis on how a mother would be seeing it. It would seem to me quite likely that it's possible that Luke's account was an eyewitness and one of the eyewitnesses was Mary. Thank you. Bye.
Well, thank you very much, Diana, for your thoughts. Indeed, I think it's written down, isn't it, that at the beginning of Luke, and I'm sure Doug mentioned this, that this was an eyewitness account, if not personally witnessed by him, though elements of it obviously are written as him being the eyewitness, he has gone and interviewed the people to find out about it, and it would make perfect sense that that would include Mary. Otherwise, not too much response to the Christmas story, but we will be hearing one person in just a short while who's going to be giving some reaction to one particular part of the story, the wise men. And of course, this is the weekend of Epiphany Sunday, isn't it? Which is when the visit of the wise men, the Magi, is recorded. But going a bit further back, though not in a sense, if you understand what I mean, last week I aired the best of 2007, and among that was a snippet from a debate from almost a year ago now on homosexuality and Christianity. And this person phoned in having heard that debate and wanted to leave their opinion.
Hi, my name's Alex. I was on the homosexuality debate going on with the Church of England, but it applies to the wider church. I'd often say I am gay and proud of being gay. I don't see it as an intrinsic disorder, as the Pope's put it, delisted as a mental illness in 74. And I just think, you know, if God is love, what's wrong with intermale love? The things in the Bible and the New Testament are the opinions of St. Paul, and it says a letter from St. Paul. I don't believe the Bible is the word of God. It's divine, it's a quoting from Jesus himself, of course. And it does say the one his disciple he loves, he never married, so it's possible he just had gay feelings that is tempting to be able to have acted on this, of course. It's at least 10 to 20% of Anglican priests are gay, so all this gay priesting, I mean, we've had gay priests and gay bishops and gay popes for literally 2,000 years, as long as the history of the Church, and the Church of England would literally collapse without all its gays.
Well, thank you very much for that. Of course, we acknowledge that there are many homosexual priests in the Anglican Church, and I'm sure probably in other denominations as well. But of course, the debate goes on as to whether that is acceptable in the eyes of God and in terms of the Bible or not. I'm sure it's a debate that we'll be having again at some point on the station. Omar Ralph is on the line now, and Omar is responding to the Christmas Story Unbelievable programme that we had with Robert Stovold and Doug Harris. Very good afternoon to you, Omar.
Good afternoon. Hi, Justin.
Thank you for joining me on the phone. Now, you phoned up, and I wanted to get a little bit into more detail on this from you, about the origins of the wise men or magi in the Bible and their links to Zoroastrianism, because I understand your mother was a Zoroastrian. Is that correct?
Yeah, my mum was a Zoroastrian. I'm Christian by choice.
But and by that you mean she was a Zoroastrian by birth rather than choice?
Yes. If you're born a Zoroastrian, you're a Zoroastrian, you die a Zoroastrian. It's a bit like the Jews.
Okay, even so it's very much a cultural identity as much as anything.
As a religion as well, yeah. Mm. People in the religion at the same time.
So what's the link then? What do you know about the Magi and Zoroastrianism?
Right, to try and set a bit of context. Zoroastrianism began with a guy called Zoroastra, probably about 1200 BC, northeastern Iran. And he had a revelation that there was only one god, not many gods, mm-hmm. and also an adversary called Ahriman, the devil. That belief took hold to some extent, but about 550 BC, Cyrus the Great, who's mentioned in the Bible in Isaiah 45, conquered what was then both the Median and Persian area of the world. So, in fact, it was his grandfather who was king of the Medes, who he conquered. Now, the Medes had a priestly group called the Magi, who were involved in all kinds of beliefs. But the Zoroastrian belief coming through the Persian side, at first thought these Magi were heretics, but it gradually absorbed them into the religion. So they became a priestly clan in a Zoroastrian religion about, I don't know, 500, 400 BC.
Mm.
Now, the other link is that the Jews had been in exile in Babylon from before that. In fact, the Persians also conquered Babylonia. And the Jews living in the area, although Cyrus gave a decree in 538 BC to go and rebuild the temple in Jerusalem, many stayed behind. And there's been quite a few books written about the influence of Zoroastrianism on Christianity and Judaism because they had beliefs in heaven and hell, the resurrection, Adam and Eve, final judgment, that kind of thing.
I see. So these wise men, they fit quite well, the kind of the theory that they were Zoroastrian priests then.
Yes, because they'd been talking to the Jews for several hundred years before the birth of Jesus, but had picked up the ideas about Messiah. And also because of their being scholarly guys looking at the stars. And the ethnic Zoroastrian is interesting is in kings, actually. It's got a sort of bent towards that kind of a pursuit of information. Certainly,
and is this what Zoroastrians themselves believe, do you think, that the wise men in the nativity story are Zoroastrian themselves?
I think they take a detached view and are not too interested, to be honest. I know the Victorians had a lot more interest in Zoroastrians because they were part of the British Empire in India. And more was written then, and probably more was generated then, but it's kind of an interest that's died over the generation.
Right. And nowadays, where does it stand? I mean, I understand it, there's not many followers remaining.
No, there's only about 150,000, 200,000 people left in the world who are Zoroastrians. They are a small group, but they are very influential. I know that the first three MPs in Britain were all Zoroastrians about the 1900s.
Oh, really? How interesting. Well, it's fascinating, and, you know, I'm sure there'll be much more to say on the subject. But thank you for your input, Omar, and thank you for listening to the programme.
OK, thank you for the time.
It's great to have you on. Thanks very much, Omar.
Thank you.
God bless. That's Omar Rauf giving us some of his knowledge on Zoroastrianism and how that relates to the Magi. Well, as I say, it is Epiphany Sunday this weekend. I don't know if that's being recognised particularly in your church, but hey, you could always go up to the pastor and tell him about the Zoroastrian links of the Magi when they came to visit the infant Jesus. Time to turn to our subject, but before I do that, let me just remind you that you can listen back to any of these programmes we've been talking about over the past couple of weeks. It's all at the webpage, premier.org.uk/radio. Click on Unbelievable and you can listen back via our podcast. It's very simple. You can either listen online or you can download it to your MP3 player. And it's just a really handy way. And that'll be the same for this show. As soon as it's over, it'll be there on the website, ready for you to listen back or send on to a friend. It's a great way to get the show out there by word of mouth. So let's meet our guests.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
And the subject under discussion today, Freemasonry and Christianity. We're asking, is Freemasonry compatible with Christianity? Does it mean serving two masters, as one of our guests makes the case? So to help us look through this rather thorny issue, but in a spirit of love and mutual respect, two guests joining me this afternoon. They are Michael Donovan. Michael is an evangelical Christian and a Freemason. Many people feel that those two doing things don't go hand in hand, but Michael says he doesn't have a problem with it. And Michael was a guest on this programme talking on this issue about a year and a half ago now. I can't believe it's been quite that long, but welcome along, Michael. Thank you for joining
Thanks,
us.
Jesse.
Our other guest is Doug Harris, director of the Reach Out Trust, who was with us not long ago, actually, just a couple of weeks ago, talking about the Christmas story for our special Christmas special. But Doug here again with his theological hat on to talk about...
Sounds good, Jesse.
Well, I know. I like to give you a good introduction, Doug.
Thank you.
Know. Mr. Know-it-all here is here to tell us what concerns he has about Freemasonry and how it, you know, goes with Christianity and that sort of thing. So I think we're going to have a really interesting discussion. And I know it's something a lot of people are interested in. In fact, I had an email just this week, funnily enough, saying, would you do a programme on secret societies? And that's the way many people would class Freemasonry, a secret society. So fortuitously, that has come about this very weekend. And I wonder what you think about Freemasonry. I think that generally across Christendom, there is a wide variety of opinion on this subject, and I think that'll be represented here in the studio, and I'm sure it's represented in our listening audience. So I'd love to get your comments, your reactions to what you hear today. As usual, the email address is unbelievable@premier.org.uk, and you can phone in your voicemail message on 08456 52 52 52 and select option 5. But first of all, let's just get an introduction to our guest today. So turning first of all to you, Michael, thank you for coming again. It can't have been too bad an experience because you've agreed to come back after last time. But you may remember we had Ian Gordon on that occasion, who was a former Freemason, talking with you. Now, in that programme, we covered a lot of stuff, and I'm sure we'll cover a lot of similar stuff today. Did that programme, if you can cast your mind back that long ago, sort of give you any reason to challenge your beliefs or make you think differently about Freemasonry?
Not essentially. Ian graciously put forward some of his doubts and fears, and I can see where he's coming from. They were principally concerned with orders that lie outside of mainstream Freemasonry, as recognised by the United Grand Lodge of England, and I can see where he's coming from there, and it's something we might develop in the course of the programme. But essentially, the principles of craft masonry, as I understand them, don't conflict with an essential belief in a Trinitarian being and in Jesus Christ, and I shared that with Ian. We had lunch afterwards, and I shared that with him, and he can see where I'm coming from as well. So he's praying for me, and yeah. I'm praying.
I mean, obviously, you don't have to answer any questions if you feel that, you know, there are things that you can't specifically answer on the basis of your affiliation to Freemasonry. Yeah. But, I mean, have you been a Freemason as long as you've been a Christian or that sort of thing?
I was a cradle Catholic, born into a Roman Catholic family, and so was baptised and Holy Communion and Confirmation in the Roman Catholic Church. And then when I went to college in London, that went by the wayside, and it was some years since before I came back to Christ, and that was as a result of a very good friend guiding me towards joining an Alpha course 15 years ago now.
Right.
And I got the Alpha bug and have been an Alpha course leader myself. We've run an Alpha course at my place of work, and so that's really what brought me back. So
yeah. And I know you're passionate about Jesus, you're passionate about your faith. Mm. And so I you're not the kind of person I would anticipate would enter any anything likely or that you considered, you know, might have implications that would go against your faith. But I mean, if it's possible, I mean, how did you come across Freemasonry as such?
It was friends from work and who I associated with, who I respected enormously as people of integrity, people whose word you could trust, and people who I admired, and they seemed to be planning on going off for an evening jolly together, and I wondered what that was all about, and eventually discovered what going off for an evening jolly was about.
You know, in the course, you probably don't broadcast it that you're a Freemason when you're in, you know, whatever company, but when it has come up, have Christian friends expressed sort of concern, or have they just been sort of interested?
No, I have to say I've not found in my place of work, and I make no secret of it, and you're right, I don't broadcast it, but I mean, if anybody asks me, you know, I'd be happy to tell them that I'm a Freemason, and I haven't found anybody who's challenged me.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Doug, turning to you, tell me, what's your, you know, do you have any personal experience in this particular area, Freemasonry?
Not personal in the sense of my family or me. I mean, as you know, the work of Reach Out Trust goes back 26 years, looking at various groups and where they're coming from. Is it biblical, etc.? And somewhere along the line, Freemasonry came up. Now, at that point, I started talking both to Freemasons and former Freemasons. So in that sense, yes, personal, in that I have spoken to the people and got involved with them, but not. It was never a thing which was, I was never invited to join, and as far as I know, none of my family ever were in.
And most of your work does concern, as it were, other sort of, you know, religious groups of Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, and that sort of thing. A lot of people contact you for advice on it and where the doctrines differ and that sort of thing. That's kind of what the kind of work that the Reach Out Trust does. Freemasonry, probably harder to categorise as that kind of thing, is it?
It is, except you mentioned that phrase earlier on, secret societies, and of course there are many more secret societies other than Freemasonry, or that are categorised under that, other than Freemasonry. And of course, it's a question of what they believe. And obviously, part of the discussion that we will get into is this quote religious or a religion or you know, whatever terminology we end up deciding on. And as such, it is, because then you have a series of beliefs. So just as you can compare Mormon beliefs with the Bible and say, are there differences, and Jehovah's Witness belief, etc., are there differences? It's the very same thing. If, and of course, so much of Freemasonry is about the Bible and is about characters from the Bible. And so I think there is a, probably more than a lot of other things, there is a very real link there. And as you've mentioned, that there's this tremendous diversity in Christianity. You know, either, you know, as I was joking before we were on there, you know, they look at Freemasons with the horns and the tail and, you know, that. Or, you know, they no problem with it. Now, I always come somewhere down the middle and therefore get it from both sides. But I think, you know, what I hope today and is that, you know, that people will, as they listen to both sides, we'll go back and look again, and we'll see that no, the probably the Freemason they know is no more a sinner or quote a Satanist than, you know, anybody else they know, but they are somebody that has a belief and genuinely feels that belief is true. But let's look at it and let's see. And so from that point of view, it very much fits in with what we do.
Well, normally on this program, we have a Christian and a non-Christian, and we're debating some aspect of difference in belief. Today we have two Christians, but there is a difference of belief about one particular area of practice, and that is whether being a Freemason is compatible with Christianity. And I was joking again just before we went on air, but we shared a little prayer here in the studio, and that was lovely. And I think that really sets the tone. This is going to be conducted in love and you know, due respect, obviously understanding that we may have different opinions. But that's the way we like to do things here on Unbelievable. So do hope you can stay with us for the rest of the programme. And we're going to be here till about 3:30 this afternoon. And we're going to be looking into this whole area. What about the secrecy aspect of Freemasonry? What about the oaths, rituals and symbolism? Do they sort of, you know, go against Christian thinking, Christian belief? What about what we've just been talking? And I think this is what we'll lead off with in our next section. Is it a religion? Is it religious, I suppose? Because that's something that Freemasonry has denied for a long time, that this is a religion as such. But what exactly is it then? We'll be looking at all these things and more, so do stay with us here on Unbelievable. And don't forget, you can get in contact. That's unbelievable@premier.org.uk. And the phone line, 08456 52 52 52.
This podcast is an outreach of Premier Insight, and it's made possible through the support of listeners like you. And your support today is so vital. We want to thank you for your generous gift by giving you exclusive access to Science, Faith and the Evidence for God Apologetics course. This 9-module course invites you to learn from John Lennox, one of the most celebrated Christian thinkers of our time, through conversations with atheist thinker Michael Ruse and secular talk show host Dave Rubin. You'll be empowered to confidently speak into conversations on faith, science, and why believing in God is not only reasonable, but logical. The course is free to you to thank you for your gift to help Premier Insight equip more Christians to confidently speak into the biggest issues of our culture and defend their Christian faith with conviction and grace. To get access to Science, Faith, and the Evidence for God, simply go to premierinsight.org/unbelievableshow. That's premierinsight.org/unbelievableshow. Unbelievable show. Thank you for your support.
And select option 5. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
We're talking about a secret society this afternoon, Freemasonry, and we're asking, is it compatible with being a Christian, being a Freemason? Doug Harris of the Reach Out Trust says it effectively means serving two masters. We'll ask him what exactly he means by that a little later. But Michael Donovan is an evangelical Christian, very forthright about his faith, and he says, as far as he's concerned, there is no, you know, inconsistency with his being a Freemason and being a Christian. That's our subject under discussion this afternoon here on Unbelievable. So I thought it'd be good to go into this section asking, is Freemasonry a religion? Now, I know that probably you're going to say categorically, Michael, it isn't a religion.
Correct.
This is, for you, a misconception of what it's about, I take it. What, I mean, if it's not a religion, then I think a lot of people maybe assume that because it does involve, as far as they can see, religious elements, prayers, scripture, I think you have to believe in God to be a Freemason. Is that
indeed?
Is that correct? So there seem to be religious elements to it, at least.
Yep.
And that's fair to say, I guess.
Yes, that is fair to say. The principal difference is that the purpose of gathering together as brothers for a lodge meeting is not worship. So we don't principally gather together for worship. We gather together in order to share a set of values, and in order to observe and act out various allegorical plays, which are intended to promote virtuous living, setting a moral or ethical theory upon a set of moral virtues is not the best of ways of deciding to live a good life. I would that everybody had as their guide Jesus Christ and his symbol of love and service. But it seems to me that it's rather crazy to criticize people who come together in order to build each other up in the purpose of living a virtuous life.
I think if I remember rightly last time, you said it's almost like calling the Cub Scouts a religion, or, you know, a religious organization, because they, you know, say, you know, the oath they swear when they become a Cub Scout involves doing my duty by God or something like that.
Yes.
You know, I mean, so you're saying it may have, you know, involve prayers and quoting scripture, etc., but this is not worship. Yeah. This is not a kind of religious gathering.
Exactly. Yes.
Are you allowed to discuss religion at a lodge meeting? Is that sort of out of bounds, or?
It's discouraged. Right. It is discouraged. Yes, and the reason that's put forward for that is in order to diminish discord, so that there's no opportunity for people to start having differences.
Right.
Harmony, unity, and sticking to the things that we agree on, the shared values, the shared virtues, that we stick to those. And leave contentious right. things outside.
I mean, does that sound fair enough to you, Doug, as far as, you know, claims that we aren't really religious as such?
Yeah, but I think it always going to come down to the question is, what do we define as religion? Obviously, the way Michael has put it there, he said we do not primarily worship, therefore it's not a religion. That statement is fine as far as it goes. I would have to say, though, to me, a religion is more than just whether I worship. It goes back to belief, who I believe in and what is happening. And one of the things, of course, that is clearly said at the foundation of Freemasonry is you've got to have a belief in a supreme being.
Mm.
And therefore, whatever reason they're getting together for, the only way that you can become part of this is to acknowledge that you believe in a supreme being. Therefore, you are putting God, a God, and probably we'll talk a little bit more about that in a while, both at the top of the agenda and the foundation. So to me, whereas I can understand strictly saying it's not a religion, I think there is so much, first of all, the supreme being, the whole area of Solomon and the temple and all of the biblical words that are used, it's very difficult to say this is not religious. I know that's slightly different, and it will get on to the outworking of that as we go. So, yeah, I can understand what's being said. I feel it's a little more. And interestingly, as you go back in history, at times the Freemasons themselves have said, we are a religion. At other times they've said, we're not a religion. And so it's sort of gone with the swings and roundabouts of the day in many ways.
I mean, if I could ask you, Michael, and again, I don't know whether you're at liberty to what you can or can't divulge, as it were, but I've you know, read that there is a Bible open at a Freemason sort of meeting and that sort of thing. So, and as Doug has said, there appear to be texts from the Bible and things that are part of the ritual, part of the observances and that sort of thing. So it's been founded in some kind of religious setting. Okay. That's obviously quite an important element of it.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely true. What Freemasonry wants to establish right at the start is that its members believe that the world was created by God. Now, we, as Doug rightly points out in his pamphlet, refer to God in Freemasonry terms as the great architect of the universe. God, my God, he is the great architect of the universe. He brought it into being. And of course, you know, it's obvious why we use those terms, because we relate our virtuous encomiums, our encouragements, to the way in which a Freemason learns his skills and hones the rough stone into a perfect stone, meet for the building up of God's kingdom. And so it's important that Freemasons believe that the world was created by God, and it is to God who we must make account of our lives on this earth. And so yes, it is religious, but it is not a religion.
I mean, it doesn't sound so bad on that kind of account.
No, it doesn't. I think we probably need to bring it down again. Let me explain it like this. If we just use the word religion out in the world, and to all our listeners, they can think of many different religions in this world, and there are many different religions, all of which may have good points to them, some of which may have bad points to them. And religion actually takes in the fact that there are many different definitions of God. Some of the religions will have Jesus in them, some of the religions will not have Jesus in them. So if we say, is it a religion or not, that comes into that. What seems to me to be really at the root here is we're not just talking about all religions, we're talking about Christianity. And one of the things, and several things have already been said which show this, is does Freemasonry really show the uniqueness of Jesus Christ, the uniqueness of the scriptures, which as evangelical Christians we believe? Does it actually show that? And that becomes, as you said at the beginning, this whole area of, are we serving two masters? Our one master, clearly, and you see that in roughly the same passage in the Sermon on the Mount, you know, seek ye first the kingdom of our God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. Is Freemasonry, therefore, showing that uniqueness of Christ? So, yes, you know, whether it's religious or not, that can encompass an awful lot. And maybe I can just at this point mention just one thing that you've already brought up, the whole question of the Bible. In many lodges in this country, the Bible is the open book, the volume of the sacred law is the Bible. But it could equally be the Talmud if you know, it was predominantly Jewish, it could equally be the Hindu scriptures. In other words, there is no uniqueness to the scriptures that, as evangelical Christians, we would accept.
And this brings us, you know, onto this point that you've mentioned, Michael. That is there a sort of syncretism going on here? I.e., there is one God, and all these different religions are just different reflections of that God. There are different paths to God. This is mine, that's yours, and we're all happy. Is that essentially what is being promoted here by Freemasonry?
I suppose I'd have to say yes, it is. I mean, I think that the United Grand Lodge would like to suggest that it is possible for brothers of all faiths to meet together in love and unity, and when they declare their fidelity to the order, they might swear on the book that they hold dear and close to them, whilst others of different faiths might swear on a book that is dear to them instead. And so yes, but I think it's a further leap to suggest that necessarily implies that what United Grand Lodge is saying is that it's okay to believe in any God. I think they'd want to say that we respect sincere beliefs of each individual.
Right. Well, that's interesting because, yes, now if you're saying it's just that they respect different people have different opinions, that's fine. But you're saying they're not actually, you know, because I have a thing Doug might say, no, what they're saying is it is a fact that all religions lead to God, that God is a kind of conglomeration of all these different ways of looking. You don't think that?
I don't think that's the spirit of the United Grand Lodge in suggesting different volumes.
Well, what do you say?
Well, they certainly lay themselves open to that.
Oh, I agree with you.
And I think this is it because yes, I've never read anywhere that the Grand Lodge have said all roads lead to God.
No.
But I've never also seen them say that the God we want you to believe in is the God of Scripture, because he is, as Christians believe, the only way. And therefore, it is as much by what they haven't said and what, therefore, they leave open to conjecture. And also some of the things that they have done. So, for instance, over the years, I mean, some of the prayers that are prayed in the lodge are taken from the Anglican prayer book.
Yep.
Except when you get to the end where it says, through Jesus Christ our Lord, they've cut that bit out.
Yes.
Now, what they've clearly done there is they've actually say, well, you, and I have no question that you in your heart are praying to the God that you know. No question about that at all. So I'm not accusing you of doing anything else. But equally, the person standing next to you that, as you've said on several occasions, is your brother. And you've taken certain oaths to be together and to be comrades together and to work together. Equally, they could be praying to a total different God. Now, if you were just in a secular society that was raising money to help needy people, and it had no religious connotations, you didn't have to believe in a supreme being, what you wanted to do was for the good of mankind, I have absolutely no problem over that. But when you bring in the fact that you've got to believe in a supreme being, but nowhere is it defined what that, you can find yourself in a very compromising position. And on Sunday morning, you can be, however, I don't quite know how you worship. We haven't talked about it, whether you lift your hands or not.
Yeah, sometimes.
But you can be lifting your hands and full of praise to the God that of Scripture. You can't actually do that in the lodge on Saturday night.
You're right.
And therefore, it does. You are, because of that basis, there are two different things going on in your life. And that's where I would say there is serving of two masters. And I'm not saying you lose your salvation as a result of it, but I am saying that can cause some real problems.
Yeah. Okay, well, yes, I do understand, and it is a moot point, isn't it? That whilst acknowledging that the brother standing next to me may be a Jew, and as you say, hold the Talmud as his sacred volume, whilst I wouldn't share that wholeheartedly. That we are therefore necessarily suggesting or promoting the idea that it's actually okay to believe in any old god, and I would want to say that it's not. But do you see, to go back to another point, you said that Freemasonry doesn't dwell upon the uniqueness of Jesus Christ, and that is true, and of course. You know, I would want everybody, all my brothers, to understand that you know, sure. Jesus and him crucified for me and bringing me
but
into right relationship
you
with
you couldn't
God.
Really share that with him, could you?
Well, certainly it would be frowned upon, yeah, if I went into a lodge meeting and started proselytizing in that way. Yes, of course it would. But at the same time, there's nothing wrong with me, and I have done talking to people. About my Christianity, my Freemasonry brothers.
I think we'll come back to this because it'll probably inform other aspects of our discussion.
Sure.
But in a sense, this is one aspect, probably a major aspect, but that people may have a problem with Freemasonry is this whether it is, you know, promoting some belief that God is sort of it comes in many forms or whatever. Mm. But I mean, others may have other issues with it. I mean, my immediate obvious one is just what he is. It's a secret society. Mm. And to me, that has overtones. Now, I may be misplaced in my beliefs here, but immediately I think of sort of doing things in the dark, you know, it's not open to, you know, everyone to be able to see. I'm thinking of scriptures like, you know, Ephesians 5, live as children of light, whatever's hidden will be exposed, you know. Mm-hmm. The Bible seems to tell us that we should do things in the open, you know. It's not good to kind of go into the secret place. You know, Christianity, as far as I'm concerned, is a religion where as soon as you go to it, you see everything there is. There aren't kind of hidden levels where you have to progress to and new truths will be revealed, which is what a secret society kind of says to me. It's this kind of Gnostic almost belief that
yes,
there is kind of revealed levels of truth and that sort of thing. Now, is that true? Is this what the secrecy is about? Is there any conflict there with kind of just being open is that a kind of...
Certainly in the past, it's true that the whole business of ritual within Freemasonry was a closely guarded secret. Today, you can go into any library, you can go on the web, on the internet, and you can see everything. I mean, there's absolutely nothing there that's not published. Anybody can find out exactly what goes on in a Freemason's lodge at any meeting.
But a Freemason themselves wouldn't tell you.
And that's not true. I am perfectly at liberty to share with you what goes on in our meetings. The only thing that I won't share with you is the word that I would share with somebody in order to prove that he's a Mason.
So that's the only thing
that's
off limits.
That's the only
that's
thing.
That's interesting.
That's the only thing.
I
just
had,
like
had
a
an idea
password.
That you weren't allowed to divulge
not
any
at all.
Aspect
not at
of
all.
The rituals or the...
No, nope, not at all. In fact, in order to make the point about the relating virtuous living to the way in which a Freemason might hone a rough stone into a perfect shape, I can tell you that I can if you want me to tell you a little part of the ritual that is explained to an initiate, where the working tools of a Mason or some of the working tools of a Mason are revealed to him, and the explanation goes like this: the working tools of an entered apprentice Freemason are the 24-inch gauge, the common gavel, and the chisel. The 24-inch gauge to measure our work, the common gavel to knock off all superfluous knobs and excrescences, and the chisel to further smooth and prepare the stone and make it fit for the hands of the more expert workmen. But as we are not all operative masons, but rather free and accepted or speculative, we apply these tools to our morals. In this sense, the 24-inch gauge represents the 24 hours of the day, part to be spent in prayer to Almighty God, part in
testing
in work, and part in helping a friend or brother in need. The common gavel represents the force of conscience, which should keep down any vain and unbecoming thoughts which might obtrude in any of the former periods. And the chisel represents the benefits of education.
So they've all taken on symbolic
exactly
sort of
exactly
meaning.
Exactly and yeah. so this is sort of so I can share all that with you. There's nothing wrong with sharing that with you. And as you can see that it's a very simple means of making an allegory out of Freemasonry, or out of Masons, and how they are skilled craftsmen in bringing about right living.
It's fascinating stuff. I mean, and what you're saying is the secret society isn't really that secret.
No,
I mean, what's your take on that?
Well, I have to say, you're actually the first Mason I've met that would even go as far as you have gone.
Yes.
And I suspect there are quite a number of Masons that would feel that you've actually gone further.
The older Masons might
exactly
not like that.
There's more openness as far as talking about those things are concerned. I think there are still, because the normal line, which I was interested you didn't say, that Mason comes out with, we're not a secret society, we're a society with secrets. And they would say, and of course it's been written down by a number of writers, that there is this whole idea that they will only share certain things with those who are initiated. I call it in all sorts of things the esoteric donut. You know, which everybody wonders what on earth is an esoteric. I mean, esoteric simply means those who are initiated, that the donut is not the one with the hole in the middle, but it's the one with the jam in the middle. You know? And you, those looking on from the outside see the sugar coating. Mm. Those that really get involved find the jam.
Yes.
And I think there is a real sense for many that that is still Freemasonry. I mean, for instance, many Masons I spoke to, whatever level they've got to, as you say, these days you can go into the library because people have spilled the beans and all the things are written down. I think it would probably still be true that if you wanted to go up to the next level, nobody in Masonry would tell you what you were going to go through until you went through it.
Yes, and the reason they would give you for that is that they wouldn't want to spoil the charm of the story unfolding.
Right, right.
You see, it's rather like a sort of the medieval mystery
plays.
A play to tell a moral story, and the force of that may be lost if you.
Okay, but so there is still some degree, and certainly again, and it may not be true with you, but I have spoken to many Masons that would not, for instance, go home and tell their wives what's been going on. Now, I know they have wives' evenings, women's evenings, two or three times a year, and you know, or whatever. But again, there is secrecy there, because if your husband goes out to, say, you know, the gospel meeting, you know, if I go to a meeting, you know, and my wife, you know, the first thing she says, go, what went on, you know, and she's always complaining because I say, it was all right, dear, it was good. She says, what is, now, I will share with her. that will not be the case. In other words, there's not that opportunity for fellowship and sharing. Now, you know, wife and husband may both be Christians. Mm. They can share everything about their Christian life, but they can't share about this. Mm. And so I do think, whereas I accept, and obviously you are an exception in sharing some of these things, there is still secrecy there.
In a sense, this is all tied in as well to what you've been beginning to describe as simply a way of sharing a moral story.
Yes.
These oaths and rituals and the symbolism, etc., which again is part of the story of Freemasonry, and something that I think for many people, especially Christians, maybe is a sort of, that sounds very odd, it must be a bit dodgy sort of thing. Mm. So I'd love to go into that in the next section, because believe it or not, we're almost out of time. I've just been listening to you two and looked at the clock, and suddenly we're nearly through the first half. But we'll go into that in the next section. And if you're listening and you've been as fascinated as I have been by this discussion, you're welcome to give your view on it. I wonder if you are a Freemason. Love to hear from you. If you have any experience of it, perhaps you decided to give it up when you became a Christian, whatever your story, whatever your experience, be really interested to hear from you about it and share what you think. As usual, the email address unbelievable@premier.org.uk. And if you'd like to get in contact by phone, leave me a phone message. I'm very happy to play those out as well next week. And indeed, I'll send any relevant ones on to our guests. You can get in contact by phone 08456 52 52 52 and select Option 5. We've been talking about the secrecy of Freemasonry. Is there a problem there as far as, a conflict with Christianity? What about the religious aspects of Freemasonry? We'll look in the next section as well as some of the things that I think a lot of people on the street sort of questions they have. You know, what about these claims that it's nepotistic, you know, that there's sort of, you know, backroom deals and whatnot in the Grand Lodge and that sort of thing. And again, looking at some of these oaths and rituals, what does a Freemason have to agree to, and just how binding is it and that sort of thing? We'll try and get into some of these aspects too as well as we continue to look at whether there is an incompatibility between Freemasonry and Christianity with my guests here on the programme. They are Michael Donovan and Doug Harris. We'll continue this discussion in just a few minutes' time. Welcome back to the programme. It's a new year. I hope it's going well for you so far, and we've got lots of interesting things to come here on Unbelievable. One thing that I do want to let you know about, in a couple of weeks' time, we'll be doing a discussion, possibly two in fact, on the Human Fertilisation and Embryology Bill. It's something that we're going to be covering in some detail here on Premier, as it will be going through the next phase in the Parliament as they discuss the implications of the bill. Many pro-life groups and Christian groups very worried about what it may mean in terms of the way it handles human sperm and eggs and the zygotes, etc. But also implications it may have for abortion law as well. So we'll be looking at that with a range of thinkers and speakers in a couple of weeks' time here on Unbelievable. So do stay tuned for more information on that. In the meantime, it's back to our discussion on Freemasonry and Christianity.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
With me in the studio is Michael Donovan. Michael is an evangelical committed Christian. He's also a Freemason. He says, as far as he's concerned, there really isn't any kind of incompatibility between those two things. Doug Harris, director of the Reach Out Trust, begs to differ. He says, as far as he sees it, Freemasonry and Christianity does mean serving two masters, if you're in both camps, as it were. Let's talk about, gentlemen, oaths, swearing, allegiances, that sort of thing. And again, I'll hit you with a Bible verse here. just to get us thinking about this. Matthew 5, I'm sure you're just very familiar with this passage, 34 to 37. I tell you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it's the city of the great king. And don't swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. Simply let your yes be yes and your no, no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one. Now, one of the interesting aspects of Freemasonry is it does involve swearing certain oaths. And again, I don't know if you're happy to kind of fill us in on what those oaths entail. But I've heard that it goes as far as swearing that if you divulge the secrets of Freemasonry, your throat may be slit or something along those lines. Now, is that true? You know, what kind of an oath are you swearing when you enter, when you're first apprenticed, as it were?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, it is true that oaths are sworn. Back in the, I think it was the late 70s, 1970s, there was a change from the United Grand Lodge of England, which relegated this dreadful, bloody penalty of having your throat cut to a symbolic status. And so, when an oath is sworn before a Freemason moves from the first degree to the second degree to the third degree, these symbolic penalties are reminded. He is reminded of, of these demonic penalties. So they're no longer is it.
So what are you swearing an oath to or an allegiance to then?
To keep inviolate those signs by which a Mason will distinguish himself to a brother. And that's it.
Right. And when you go through this initiation ceremony, there's obviously, again, symbol and ritual involved in that. And again, I'll just sort of reiterate what I've heard, but it involves, you know, a noose around the neck, opening one's breast, and a dagger being pointed at it.
Yep.
Again, it all sounds rather weird.
Yes.
It sounds a bit sort of like some kind of strange.
Indeed. But
ritual.
When I remind you that what I said earlier, that I and many thinking Masons believe that these are rather like ancient miracle and mystery plays, and so they are theatrical. They're meant to be theatrical. So they're larger than life. I challenge you that you must not rashly enter the lodge. I place a dagger at your breast. I challenge you that you must your entry into the lodge is predicated upon fidelity, and therefore the noose should restrain you from rashly entering.
I mean, is it the case then that they've sort of been the implication of these signs and the oaths have been sort of softened a bit, as it were, over the last 30 or 40 years?
I think they've always had that symbolic implication. But it is the case that Grand Lodge has realised nobody's going to take seriously, the idea that you're really going to be stabbed it's theatrical, it's symbolic, that's the whole point.
Doug, do you have any problem with this kind of theatrics behind closed doors?
I was just thinking to join the local Baptist church, you had to go through the same ritual. I just wonder how many people would come in. But all joking.
But you
apart,
do have to. There is a certain amount of ritual in Christianity. You know, in a sense,
absolutely.
Baptism is a ritualistic sort of thing to do.
I would agree with you. But there's more than ritual to it, isn't it? Mm. I mean, if you take believer's baptism, there is more than ritual to that. You are testifying to something concerning our Lord and concerning, the God whom we serve and what Jesus has done in death, burial and resurrection. What you are acting out here, of course, once again, has absolutely nothing to do with Christianity. Mm-hmm. And in fact, all of the symbols and are far removed in many ways from Christianity, because nobody would stick a dagger at somebody and put a noose around their neck.
Exactly.
And pull it tight if you're not careful. I mean, that wouldn't happen. And so you see, I think two or three things come out of this. First of all, all, as you say, they have changed it now. As far as I understand, I mean, certainly in the olden days, up until about 86, I think, or whatever it was, but whenever it was, the candidate would actually make that oath themselves. And tongue torn out and buried in the sea at high tide and all sorts of... Ugh. Yes. but I still think now that the master who is... who is leading the ceremony still speaks those oaths over the candidates. Is that correct?
But makes it clear that these were the symbolic penalties at one time associated with. Those words are used.
Okay, fine. I accept that. Yeah. So you've certainly got all the older Masons that are still underneath that. The other ones have got off scot-free. You have got the symbolism, which has nothing to do with Christianity. You've got the darkness.
Does this take place in a sort of darkened atmosphere?
Not in the first 2 degrees, no.
The third degree.
Yes.
And of course, when you get to the third degree, you have this horrific symbolism of dying, being put in a coffin.
Not in the English Constitution.
But that happens, doesn't it?
In some constitutions, yes, but not in the English constitution.
but I think in most lodges... I say put in a coffin, I don't mean necessarily literally put in a coffin.
Okay.
Sorry.
Symbolically.
Yes, yes. Sorry, yes. I mean, I do know some lodges where they've actually been... I've met people who have actually been put in a coffin, but that lid hasn't been put on. But symbolically, you go down into death and you are raised again. Now, if that isn't a complete takeoff of the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, it doesn't come anywhere else. And so you have this problem of darkness, you have this problem of oaths which are there, which may be not put under, but then why they're said if you haven't got to put them under, that is a mystery to me. And again, this is the difference. In Christianity, everything is to do with setting one free. Mm-hmm. What Jesus wants to do is all the things that bind us and bound us before we came to him, he wants to set us free, rip the cords off. It seems to me everything in Freemasonry wants to tie you in to Freemasonry. And you have a relationship then with, as you've said today, the one thing you won't share, and I'm not having a go at you for that. No. I appreciate what you say. The one thing you want to share is how you identify yourself to another brother. Therefore, you have something between a brother in Freemasonry that may not be a Christian, more than you would have with a brother in Christianity.
Why and, do you say more?
Well, because you've got a secret thing which says, it says, I'm a Freemason, so am I. And you've got a relationship there, which you don't have that relationship with anybody else.
Obviously.
But when you put that all together, there is something which is goes beyond all other relationships in Freemasonry than anything else you have. So you have, once again, it coming down, where that takes a place above and beyond your Christian life. And above and beyond who you are. You see, again...
I don't see why it should necessarily be the case that having a secret means of identifying my brothers in Freemasonry places that relationship above a relationship that I might have with my fellow Christians. Why does it place it above? It's different.
It is different. But
why is it superior?
Well, let me say, why do you want to identify yourself to another Freemason?
Oh, gosh, yes. It's historical. Yes. It's purely historical. It's purely historical.
Right. But it's because we're in this together. Now, you and I, when we met, fine, We shook hands, the proper way. let me hasten to answer you. Okay, and we started sharing because our Christian life, and we communicated together. And there is a level there. But why do you need something that's secret? Why do you need something that's special beyond? And you see, and it comes back to just finally, and I will shut up. this one thing. But this whole thing, if in an evangelical church, the preacher stood up and said, we all have got to believe in a supreme being, and that's, we're preaching a supreme being, and made no other, and we are going to have these special ceremonies for you to come in, and then you've got to learn this shake, and every time, you know, you're at the door, you're going to... I would suggest many evangelical Christians would walk out, because they would say, that's not biblical, that's not... So how, as a Christian, can you add those things on? Okay, keeping it separate to your... But how can you add them on to your Christian life?
Because I don't see them as separating me from my Christian brethren. I have different relationships with lots of different people, and they're distinguished by other symbols and rituals. I know what you mean.
I mean, what of the, you know, the worry that some may say, and you've said that in a sense that a lot of these oaths and rituals, etc., have taken on a very symbolic meaning, and that sort of thing. I mean, some people worry that oaths and rituals, it's about the occult, it's some link to Satanism and that sort of thing. I mean, where do you stand on that? Because I've even heard people talking about, you know, people claim that they've had a family curse or something because someone, a member of their extended family maybe, has been involved in Freemasonry. You know, people seriously believe that there are occultic elements to it. Now, is there any basis in that? Maybe Michael and...
I don't see that craft masonry as practiced in under the Constitution of the United Grand Lodge of England can be accused of occultism in any way. Now that's not to say that I don't know of Freemasons who are rather worryingly interested in things like Gnosticism and the whole business that there is some sort of knowledge which can be shared,
last program with Ian. This was what really drew him into going up the degrees, etc., was this feeling that he was engaging in something which was revealing a deeper truth and then a deeper truth to him.
Right.
You know, and you say that is an interest for some, but it's not how you interpret it.
It's not something that interests me for obvious reasons. It would bring me into conflict with my Christian faith. But it's something we touched on right at the beginning of the program. You know, I've said several times in the program that I don't see any incompatibility between Christianity and the 3 degrees of craft masonry. There is a thing essentially incompatible there, but it is fair to say.
Am I getting the impression here, though, Michael, that you're saying, but I wouldn't go into these higher degrees?
Absolutely, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Is that not kind of an inconsistency in itself, though, if you're not prepared to kind of take it to a further conclusion?
Because,
you're saying...
Justin, phone the United Grand Lodge, talk to the Grand Secretary and ask him how... What degrees do you recognise at the United Grand Lodge? And he will tell you there are 3 degrees in craft masonry and no other. And the United Grand Lodge will have nothing to do with the other orders.
So what are these other orders then? Are they sort of kind of independent organisations that kind of are kind of somehow linked in? Just through association with
yes, Freemasonry? Yes, by association. So when
I hear the phrase so-and-so is a 33rd degree Mason, that's nothing to do with an official recognition by the United Grand Lodge. So the leader of Freemasonry in this country is just a 3rd degree Mason.
The leader of Freemasonry in this country is the Duke of Kent. What orders the Duke of Kent belongs to, you know,
a secret.
Well, no. You look in any yearbook,
it will tell you,
and it'll tell you,
right.
And it'll tell you what orders he belongs to. That's up to him.
It's interesting. I hadn't quite realised there was this distinction between the official policy and as it were, what splinter groups do.
Yes.
You know, beyond that.
Yeah.
I mean. Okay, so you say, as far as you're concerned, that there's no occultic sort of...
In craft masonry.
Mm. I mean, would you agree with that, Doug? Or?
In what Michael has said, yes, I do agree. In other words, the majority of Masons in this country only go to the third degree, which is Master Mason. That is true. Mm. And a lot of the things that people talk about in the occult side of things are in the high degrees, and Royal Arch is the one where most people go through and up to the 33 degrees.
And what kind of, just to give an idea, what sort of things would that involve?
Well, you get to the stage, for instance, where names are given, like Abaddon, which is in Revelation is the demons, the king of the demons. You get this whole thing. It used to be in the seventh degree, you would have this name, which is not ostensibly used now, but is very interesting. It was this Yarbul'on. Which, of course, really did show the syncretism, because Yah stood for Jehovah, Bull for the Baal, which anybody that's read their Old Testament understands, and On was Osiris, the Egyptian sun god. And so you had all those three coming together. Mm. And so that clearly showed. Now, that was in the seventh degree. But coming back to where Michael is, I think... Whereas I accept what you're saying, that in what you have gone through, you yourself don't feel you've gone into the occult, and directly I would accept that. So some of the things we've said in the program already of the secrecy and the darkness and the way the Bible talks about that, I wouldn't accuse you in any way of getting into occultism, but I would say... Do you not think that potentially that can open the doorway to some of these things? Mm. But there are still symbolism in Freemasonry. And for instance, the all-seeing eye. Mm-hmm. That is very distinctly Osiris.
Yes.
And that goes back into another god, into an Egyptian sun god. That goes back into, in that sense, what was called in the Old Testament, idol worship. Mm. And therefore, even as far as you've gone, whereas I don't believe you're worshipping Satan, even in the lodge, I don't believe that at all. There, some of the ceremonies you've been through, as we said, some of the things that have happened, I do believe potentially can hinder your growth as a Christian, because they are not giving to Christ the glory. They're giving it some other way.
I understand. No, I do understand that, and I must say that the biggest potential threat that Freemasonry poses in my eyes is that it maybe distracts people from the truth of Christ's birth, death, and resurrection, and the way that affects our relationship with.
One thing I was going to note was: is there a worry here that the men involved in it are trying to fill some kind of spiritual gap, which should really be being filled by Jesus?
I think that's undoubtedly the case, Justin. In many cases, and that does sadden me. And it's why I often do get into conversation with my brothers outside of the lodge, and share my Christian beliefs. And many do ask me, why.
Can I ask you, very lovingly, Michael, that, with that, with your understanding that it can be a distraction, with your understanding that many Masons feel because we are doing good works, that enables us to go to the great Grand Lodge in the sky. That's their belief, and that is really what it says. Do you feel that, therefore, that you can stay in and you can sit there? Wouldn't it be so much better that you shared with your Masonic brothers. Brothers, I cannot stay here anymore because I know the way to the Lord is not through Masonry. And I want to show you that by coming out. Don't you think that's something? Sorry.
No, that's fine.
But
that's
we're here
fine.
For the... We're not afraid of these questions.
I could. Of course I could, Doug. But it seems to me that in so doing, I would be saying to them, look, guys, I know why you're coming to this meeting. You're coming here to worship God and to ensure your place in heaven. And they would laugh at me. They don't. That's not why they go there. No. They go there to share with their brothers. The saying at the end of every meal of the festive board, yes, after the meeting is often taken from Robert Burns, one of his verses. You may know it. We Masons know the noble truth that Robert Burns has told, that rank is but the guinea stamp and man himself the gold. Yeah. With us the rich and poor unite. And equal rights maintain. Happy to meet, sorry to part, and happy to meet again. And it's in that spirit that they come together. And it's not this... If we did all go to a lodge meeting and get down on our knees and pray to God to save us and bring us in, that's not why we do it.
But looking at it from the other side, and as I say, they know, some of them know you're a Christian.
Yes.
Don't they... say, well, it's perfectly all right then. I don't actually need anything more. This gospel message that I heard on the radio or on the... I don't need it because, I mean, he's here with us, he's fine. I mean, isn't it showing that sort of problem?
Well, perhaps not, because what I'm saying to them is, actually, outside of here, I'm a committed Christian and I go to church and I do. So I'm actually adding.
It's sort of undercover evangelist. time again is beating us, gentlemen, I'm afraid to say, because I could carry on this discussion for a long, long time. But it's been really fascinating. Let me just again reiterate, anybody who'd like to air their point of view on this, you're listening. And, of course, this is the very format of this show is so that people with different opinions can air those opinions. So I get a lot of emails and things saying you shouldn't have this kind of person on, but we're here for an honest and open discussion, and I think it has been conducted with real respect, and I know you guys
Absolutely.
Both love the Lord and that's important. So if you want to get in touch, we'd ask you to do it in the same kind of spirit, and that is via email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. And again, the phone number if you'd like to leave a voicemail message, 08456 52 52 52, and select option 5. And I'm happy to pass on your comments to our guests and indeed play them out, read them out on the programme next week. Time's beaten us, gentlemen. It's been really lovely to have you on. It's just been a really fascinating discussion, one that, you know, has many more facets to it, but we don't have time to go into all of them by any means. Michael, take our love back to, you know, both those in the church and those in the lodge.
I
hope that you'll come on again at some point. You know, maybe I'm sure there are many more things we could discuss, but thank you for your openness.
Thanks, Justin.
Doug, thanks for being here. And just remind us, if people want to find out about the Reach Out Trust, how can they go about doing
it? They can, the easiest way is to look on the website, which is www.reachouttrust.org. And plenty of links there they can go through. They can also then email me direct from the site and anything Fantastic. They want to know.
Wonderful. I hope you've enjoyed the programme today. And don't forget, you can listen back or send on to a friend. That's at premier.org.uk/radio. That's the place to go. Click on the Unbelievable link and you'll be able to listen back to this programme. It's available now as a podcast and plenty of other programmes featuring Doug on a couple of occasions as well. So feel free to get hold of that. premier.org.uk/radio. Let me tell you what's coming up in the next couple of weeks.
You're unbelievable.
We're going to be doing some debates on the Human Embryology and Fertilisation Bill. It's currently working its way through Parliament, about to be debated again this January. And it's got some serious implications for the pro-life issues that many Christians are concerned about, whether that be sort of the way that we treat sperm and egg and human
embryos, but also it may have radical implications for the abortion law. Some people are pushing for abortion to be made easier, and that could be facilitated by this bill. Others want to see the limit decreased. We're going to be looking into this in some detail over the next couple of weeks. Do hope you can be with me for these important and interesting debates. That's all here on Unbelievable. Hope you'll stay with us then.